Hi, this is Ava from Vanta. In today's digital world, compliance regulations are changing constantly, and earning customer trust has never mattered more. Vanta helps companies get compliant fast and stay secure with the most advanced AI automation and continuous monitoring out there. So whether you're a startup going for your first SOC 2 or ISO 27001, or a growing enterprise managing vendor risk, Vanta makes it quick, easy, and scalable. And I'm not just saying that because I work here. Get started today at Vanta.com.
Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur Media, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to awesome people who do awesome things and ask the simple question, how on earth did you do that? Ready to get informed and inspired? I am too, so let's get to it. How Success Happens starts now. So if you're like me, some days you wake up and you realize you really need something. Then you go and you search for it on the internet and you can't find it. An hour later, you just give up. Or maybe you're like today's guest, and instead of giving up, you and your wife go ahead and create a company to make that thing you wanted. And then 14 years later, you oversee a massive empire. That's Scott Tannen. He was the co-founder of Bull and Branch, a bedding company that is devoted to luxury quality organic products that are affordable and made through fair trade practices. And my God, are they comfortable. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm sitting here at the throne of my empire, apparently.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, I met you at a press event the other day. It was more than a press event. It was this really cool, intimate dinner that you guys threw. And it was really awesome hearing about the products and about you and your wife's story. So we're going to get into all of that. But maybe we could first start with a question that we're asking everyone, which is, how do you define success for yourself? And has that definition changed over the years as Bull and Branch has grown?
It's something I struggle with, is what does success look like? Because I know what it feels like. It's something a little bit elusive, like that carrot dangling out there that you never quite reach. If 14 years ago, when Missy and I first started working on Bull and Branch, you told me where the company would be today, I wouldn't have believed you. And I would define it as like beyond a wildest dream. Today, I sit here still pretty hungry because I think there's a lot of green space in front of us. And so to me, though, when I pull back, I have three daughters. My youngest twins are graduating high school in a couple weeks here, and I've got one that's 21 about to be a senior in college. And so when I really think about what success looks like, it's the fact that I'm at a place in my life where I can enjoy them and enjoy where they're going with maybe feeling a little less of the pressure that I felt 10 years ago when I was wondering how we're going to handle the electric bill.
Can you talk a little bit about that decision? Can you give us the origin story and don't leave out any of the details?
I was in an interesting place in my life, to be honest with you. So I had sold my last company, which, as you know, was in the video game space. So it couldn't be a more different industry. And it wasn't this kind of like, oh my gosh, you sold the company and come visit me on my yacht in the Mediterranean. It's like, okay, let's go find another job. And unfortunately, just within weeks of selling the company, we closed the deal on December 3rd. And by the first week of January, my mom gets diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So I stayed on with Publishers Clearinghouse, who acquired my gaming company, for a while. And they were great about really just letting me have kind of one foot in the business and one foot in the world with my mom. So a year later, she passed. Mm-hmm. And as you know, with a pancreatic cancer diagnosis, a year is actually winning. Yeah. And so I was at a bit of a crossroads in my life. I had three young kids. At the time, Missy had been a school teacher, but was home with them. So that was an interesting dynamic of, okay, I've got to go find a job, or she's got to find a job. She and I certainly weren't going to sit in the house together all day. So I was consulting and doing the things I needed to do to sort of pay the bills. And I was just particularly attracted to the first generation of direct-to-consumer businesses, right? Things like Shopify were just sort of popping up. And the bar to get a product to market and get a company to market selling online was really, really low. I just became intrigued seeing businesses that I didn't think had great products, but had really good marketing that were at least seeming to do well. And so as a marketer myself, I was like, well, I can do that. I just need to find a category that nobody's playing in. And I had a whole bunch of ideas, and betting was one of them. If you have your eyes open and you're looking to start something, everything is a potential business opportunity. And for us, one of those was moving from a queen bed to a king bed, and Missy saying, where should I go for sheets? You know, what's the difference between what I'm paying at Bloomingdale's or Bed Bath & Beyond? And my initial instinct was, well, let me just go on Google and solve this for you. And I'm staying up all night. You know, what's the first thing you think about when you think about betting is you think about thread count. And to me, I remember finding an article from like the early 90s in the New York Times archives that was saying a thread count didn't mean anything. And I was like, well, I just kept unpacking things. And I'm like, think about a category literally every human plays in.
Yeah,
nobody
right.
knows anything about. There's no Tide, right? There's no Coca-Cola. There are right. no like Olympic brands in this space.
Yeah.
And so all of my thought process, especially having started my career in consumer goods, I'm like, well, why can't there be a brand in this category? And what it becomes a very long story from there of how does Missy get involved? And as you know, she was basically saving me for myself, which is my intent was to do what everybody else has done in our category and other categories, which is, all right, let me go find someone who can make a product and I'm going to work really hard on the branding. I'm going to create a brilliant brand that people are excited about. And yeah, it's a bed sheet. Who cares? And as she's famously said, there's no way I would even let you buy our sheets, let alone start a sheets company. So our very first meeting, she came to because I was asking dumb questions like, well, what do you think the hand feel should be? Or what's the design? Does it matter? And she's like, oh my God. And she came to a meeting and that's where everything for our story changed.
So going into it, you weren't intending that, hey, we're going to run this thing together. And then she saw you, as you describe it, floundering a bit and was like, we're doing this together. Is that fair to say?
You know, I don't think there was ever a moment where it's like, let's go start a company together. I'm always like an idea guy. And so she knows I used to keep a notebook by my bed of ideas I think about that could be businesses from the time we were in college together. And so there was always an idea. And I think this one, just as I started diving into it, she was like, I think you're going about this entirely incorrectly. Yes, the marketing piece is important, but you've got to have a great product. And let me tell you, she having no experience, right? Being a third grade teacher, no experience in anything around business. She was just going to the market and buying samples in different places and truly ripping them apart and seeing like, how are these made? What makes this $700 yeah. sheet set different than what I'm getting at Target? And she started to like truly teach herself. And as we started to go down this path together, we realized that we didn't know anything about this category. So we had to learn it from the ground up. And I think Missy's nature is she is the classic 100%er. And you've met her, you know. There is no detail too yeah. small to be thought about. And so when she was trying to just simply develop an understanding of how to make a better bed sheet, she was starting to really unpack things that I think nobody else in the industry had or even since has really done to the same extent, which is she's going to teach herself this. And look, if we had gone and worked for any big bedding company, they would have like plopped a manual on our desk and said, okay, this is how we do things. These are who our suppliers are. This is where we get our raw materials from. Because we didn't have anything, we had a choice, right? We could start with the importers like others are doing, or what Missy was getting frustrated, she's like, there's nothing different. If I go to the same importer that Restoration Hardware is, then how are my right. sheets better? And so it became like these two paths where she was going down the path of, I'm going to figure out how to make the best possible product. And I was going down the path of, how do I find a way to create a meaningful brand in this category for consumers?
Is there anything in that idea notebook that maybe you jotted down when you were half asleep and when you were awake, were like, what?
One of them that I told people about this and they laughed. I thought the world needed the first luxury toilet paper. One of the ideas that I really tried to do and struggled with was, and thank goodness, because COVID would have put us out of business, but I thought about really high quality, well-fitting men's suits and suiting at like a Target price point. How do you democratize looking good in the workplace?
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great idea. The only difference is I wear hoodies and jeans every day. And
So
in terms of living your product, that might have been a mistake. But Missy once had one that was a zapper that could detect anytime you broke your New Year's resolution, it would zap you in the arm. Which I was like, I don't know how we're going to make that, but that's an interesting concept.
That's great. I love that. Well, branding and marketing, it starts with a product, but the product's got to have a name. Bowl and Branch, where did that come from?
Yeah. So, you know, as we got into really understanding how we're going to not only make a different product, but make a better product, we realized that the big differentiator was the fact that 99% of the folks out there are in a race to the bottom to get the cheapest quality raw material they possibly can. That feels good, but is the cheapest. And we went the other way, where we said we were going to start with the best. We're going to go with the absolute best raw material. And to that, it was very clear. It was not just organic cotton. It was a certain grade of organic cotton that came from a certain region and very specific growing conditions. But when understanding what was going to make or break this business was going to be the cotton, we had a ton of different product names and even registered the company initially as a different name, but came up with Bowl and Branch. So if you think about a cotton plant, right, the white puffy fibers that you see grow on the bowl, and which grows on a branch. And so, no, it is not my name. Nobody calls me the Bowl, at least not to my face. And so that's where the name came from. And it felt to us, we wanted a brand that felt like it had been around for a long time. Like we didn't want to feel like, you know, it's like how many startups go to branding agencies and come up with like a single word that has nothing to do with anything.
Right.
And just, we wanted to go a different vibe.
And missing a vowel or something like that.
Exactly.
Adobe Express is the quick and easy create anything app. It's a game changer for my business, my go-to for creating content. From social posts to images, videos, flyers, whatever I need to stand out. With customizable templates and smart features, it saved me endless hours. And the best bit, it's free. Search for Adobe Express to find out more and get started today.
So anyone who's listening to this might recognize Scott's voice. You were literally the voice of Bowl and Branch in these radio commercials that were kind of ubiquitous when you guys first started out. Can you tell us about that decision to go the radio route and maybe one of the more popular shows that you were on and what you did to get on that show?
When we were planning Bowl and Branch, there weren't many folks in e-commerce and DTC. And by the time we launched, there were 1,000 in every category. And they were playing the exact same playbook. They were running a ton of Facebook ads. And we were struggling. We couldn't get performance out of it because we weren't selling a cheap product. We were actually selling a luxury product, which in hindsight, I realized we were probably the first DTC luxury brand. And I didn't realize that at the time. So we needed to think about a different way to access the market. This is in the time before influencers was on the tip of everybody's tongue. I was looking for advertising venues where people are attentive. Because when we pay for advertising, we're paying for impressions. How valuable those impressions are can vary. And so we started doing a little bit of experimentation with advertising on the radio and going into channels like politics or health or those areas where people listen kind of intently. Mm-hmm. And we immediately saw some decent performance. And I have been, as I know you are, a Howard Stern listener from the time like I could control the radio in the car, the K-Rock days in New York City.
Yeah.
And I have bought more dumb stuff off that show. Howard is, to me, an influencer. He's a curmudgeon, right? He doesn't like anything. And the very few things in the world he likes, I usually realize they're pretty darn good. And like, I've become really good friends with Tom Patterson because of Tommy John underwear. And I'd been buying Tommy John underwear from before we started Bowl and Branch. And now he's like a really good friend of mine. And, and we met because of Howard. But I just felt like we got to get on Howard. And friend of a friend, somebody knew Howard, and I sent him sheets. I actually had to custom make them for him because he has a custom size bed. And it was more in the beginning. I was like, I just want to see if Howard likes this stuff. And it turns out he loved it. So I got in touch with SiriusXM and I was like, hey, want to buy some spots. At this point, we had a media agency, but it wasn't anything sophisticated. I didn't really realize you needed one. And they were like, yeah, we'd love for you to advertise on Howard Stern. Here's the terms. You got to guarantee us a year. The minimum spend is $2 million. We hope you go north of that. And you got to buy all this other stuff also. And I was like, I got $2 million to get on Howard? Are you kidding? So I called my friend Dan, who still runs a media agency called Oxford Road. I thought long and hard. And I was like, I think that this can break open our business. Because I thought about Snapple, right? Think about the brands that Howard's put on the map.
Yeah, right. Years.
And knowing that he and Beth really loved the product, I took all the cash we had and then I started getting SBA loans. And I ended up raising $2 million in debt, all personally guaranteed. And I sent it all to SiriusXM, which is the most illogical, irresponsible, ridiculous thing you could ever possibly do. Like, you know, when everyone says, don't put all your eggs in one basket, I actually bought the basket, put all my eggs in it, and then just said, let's see what happens. And it's funny, years later, Howard heard the story and his response was, man, Scott's an idiot. But it worked. And it fundamentally, within the first read, changed the course of my life and our business overnight. And we don't advertise as regularly on Stern, but even to this day, people come into our retail stores all over the country and be like, yeah, I heard about you from Howard.
I know it happened and it worked out well, but just hearing you tell that, I'm like having a mild panic attack.
There's so many things when you look back on when you start a business and you're like, what was I thinking? Right? Like, first of all, even starting this business, Missy and I worked on this for almost 2 years before we launched. And at the point we launched, we're like, we really know this stuff. We look back now and we're like, what were we like? Well, how did our families let us do this? Sometimes what you know and how hard you're willing to work and fight for it, you can fight the wrong battle really hard and still lose. But for us, it was just grinding and grinding and grinding and trying to avoid the catastrophic mistakes because the mistakes were going to come.
Do you think that not knowing exactly what you were getting into, it was helpful in any way?
Oh, a blessing. Because sometimes, like, if you're standing at the base of Mount Everest and you're like, yeah, no, I can't climb that. But if someone's like, just get 100 feet. All right, I think I could get 100 feet and 100 feet more and 100 feet more. And I think that's a little bit like our journey's been. I mean, Missy and I were really the only employees for the first year. And then we hired someone just to help us with customer service. I mean, our 800 number would ring my cell phone. Like at dinner, wow. I'd be like, hello, thanks for calling Bull and Branch. And they're like, can I speak to someone in sales? I'm like, let me connect you. Boop, boop, boop. Hi. Hi, this is Bob in sales. That's what you do in the beginning. And now when I think about, we've got an enormous customer experience team. We've got all these different departments. And I'm like, how did we get all of the work that needed to be done, done? How did we even make it happen? And somehow you figure it out.
So speaking about hiring, that's something that a lot of people struggle with in a way, because first of all, when do you need to make the leap to hire someone? A lot of people have said, no one is going to work as hard for your company as you. And you guys are famous for the customer experience. So how do you go about hiring people that are going to carry things out the way that you guys wanted them?
I'll give you two examples, Robin Hecht and Anna Velchert. They were two of my very first employees. Robin was literally number one, and they're still with the company. I think there's a lot of things we've done well and a lot of things we've done poorly, but hiring people is probably the thing we've done best in the business. And I believe that in your early days of a business, you need to start supplementing yourself with two things. You need expertise in specific areas that you're weak in. So I'll use Robin as an example. I can't add. She's our controller. Really, really important to have Robin. And Robin, at the time, she was our HR department. Like, she's everything.
Yeah.
At different times, she's been our controller and she's incredibly organized in all the things that I'm not. Anna is a great example of someone that I would call, you know, at the time was like an athlete. She could do a lot of different things and had a great can-do positive attitude. And both of them, I believe, care as much about Bull and Branch as Missy and I do. That to me is the most important thing. I've made mistakes. I've hired the wrong people a lot of times at Bull and Branch at all levels, C-level and lower. And what you find is that when you're sitting across the table from somebody in an interview, you have to get past the resume. And I think that's where investment groups, private equities and whatnot, why they have such poor records of hiring is because they hire a resume. You got to hire a person. And if you find somebody that you're like, all right, this person is willing to do what it's going to take and wants to, and are going to bring the right energy to the culture and all of those things, start there. And then look at the skill set. Because if they don't satisfy that first piece, they're never going to work, no matter what their skill set looks like.
Right, right. So is there a magic bullet question that you ask someone, or it's just over the course of a conversation?
My interviews are kind of famously bizarre because I rarely talk about the business. I just go deep on small talk. And it's sort of like, you know, Google has that layover test. I'm a big believer in that. let's just talk about what motivates you. Like you asked me, what does success look like? I want to just get underneath the facade that everybody walks in an interview, myself included. You're trying to give the projection of the best version of yourself that you think the other person wants to hear. I just try to pick apart at that and get to know the individual because, look, if someone's worked at whatever company for 6 years, I can reference to know if they have the skills. I don't need someone to do like a math equation in front of me to prove that they can do long division. I can't do long division. It's never held me back.
You know, you and your wife co-founded this. You talked about your daughters. I think I read that one of your daughters was an intern. Maybe more of them were. Can you talk a little bit about the dynamics of a business and a family all in one happy place?
The common thing I get from people is like, oh, I can never work with my spouse. It's amazing in every way because what co-founders have to have is deep trust and common goals. When you're working with your spouse, especially in our case where we don't do the same things, I cannot touch her skill set. Her vision, her attention to detail, what she does with our products and our factories and our supply chain blows me away on a daily basis. And I'd like to think she feels the same way about the way we look at the consumer proposition and how well we operate as a company. And so we may have different interests and different focus, but we both want the same thing. And we're both actually wired in a similar way. Like neither one of us are particularly financially motivated. We're motivated by progress and doing well and doing better and trying to also at the same time, you know, have a great culture within the company and set a good example for our own kids. And so, yeah, Sophie, my oldest daughter, she's interned for us in the past on sort of like a more of a part-time basis, but she's going to be part of our proper college intern program this summer, which is exciting. And, you know, to me, I know that my team will not treat her like she's gotten Missy's kid.
Yeah.
They're going to treat her like she's a proper intern. And again, I think that's sort of the team we've built. Missy and I don't really walk around the office holding hands. You know, we don't like start every meeting with a hug. We love each other, but we also, you know, we operate the business like the way we treat each other in the offices is the way we treat our other employees. We just don't go home with them.
That's great.
We drive separately though, to be clear. I got to listen to Howard in the morning and she sits in total silence in her car. You can unpack that when you interview her.
Right. So you've mentioned a couple of times, you know, having ups and downs. When you are having those downs or something's not going the way you had hoped, is there something that plays in your head? Is there some motivating thing that you can tap into to maybe get yourself out of a funk and get back into it? Or are you not the type of person who gets into that funk to begin with?
I would say one of the great gifts I have is a short-term memory. It's not good because I leave my keys everywhere, but I don't dwell on things. And I would say that's maybe a little bit different between Missy and I. I think she's very intense and she wants everything to be perfect. So when something isn't perfect, I think she can really struggle with that. But given what she's doing and not being able to let things go, she's ultimately protecting the customer in a good way. Yeah. For me, one of the things personally, like I'm dyslexic. And so I think one of the things dyslexics learn at an early age is you're imperfect. Mm. And to come easy to other people, you're going to make mistakes on. Like I am not going to be able to spell anything to save my life. And so I've grown up understanding that mistakes happen. And it's what you do on the backside of that mistake that really makes the difference, right? And so that could be whether it's a small academic challenge. I'm imperfect. And I don't have the expectation of perfection for myself. I don't really have the expectation for perfection for anyone else. When I was, I'll tell you a great story. So early in my career, I was working at Kraft Foods and Mike Polk was the CEO of the company. I can't remember what exactly happened, but there was something involving one of the brands I was working on and something small didn't go well. And we sort of had to face the music and meet with Mike. And Mike could have well reamed us out, right? He's got to deal with the investors. He's got to deal with the board. He's got to deal with everything else. And he's like, let's start. What do we learn? What do we learn from this? And that stuck with me forever. I think about Mike, who probably has no idea I existed then or now. Maybe he does. Mike, if you're out there, thanks. But, you know, that kind of approach to, we're all people. Everybody's trying to do the best they can. Right? You try not to yell at a ref at a girl's soccer game, right? Like, out there trying to screw up a call. Like, they're not trying to get it wrong. They're trying to do the best they can. And so, if you give ourselves and everybody else a little bit of grace in that and focus on what our intent is and focus on learning and try not to make the same mistakes twice, we avoid those downs.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, that leads us, I think, Scott, to the speed round.
The
famous How Success Happens speed round that everyone tunes in for. So the first question, you kind of sort of answered it there, but let's see. All right, so here we go. So what is a habit you're grateful to have and one you wish you could ditch?
I wish I could stop biting my nails, but I'm very, very optimistic. And so I'm very glad that I'm extremely optimistic.
What is something that most people love and you secretly can't stand? And mustard. You can't say me.
Mustard.
Mustard.
I'm afraid of mustard. I can't be in the room with mustard. I think mustard's disgusting. It shouldn't have been invented. It's the root of all evil.
Did you like fall in a vat of mustard when you were a kid? What happened?
No, I don't know. I just, it's awful. And my kids and Missy, they love it.
Great. What is your favorite way to turn off your brain?
Play video games. Mm. So I'll go downstairs in the basement and fire up my PlayStation and everything's perfect.
That's great. That's great. And since you deal in betting here, will you share with us a reoccurring nightmare?
Yeah. I have a reoccurring nightmare. I think it means something. I've Googled it, but then I forgot. That's the short-term memory issue again. But I'm back at Vanderbilt in school and I realized like I forgot to go to a class for an entire semester and I'm going to fail it, which I don't know why it's a nightmare because I actually did fail some classes in college. So it's not like it would ruin my perfect 4.0. It would ruin my perfect 2.2 when I needed to graduate.
That's fantastic. And then since we've been, you know, you guys are luxury. First of all, this isn't a question, but I got to say, I've been thinking about this whole time we've been talking. So not too long ago, I had to prep for a colonoscopy. And if there was luxury toilet paper on the market, you got a buyer right here, my friend.
I have to be honest. I'm a fan of the built-in bidet with the heated toilet seat. Yes. Don't knock it until you've tried it. And so once I experienced that, I'm like, toilet paper consumption is negligible.
We're getting personal here,
but that's not part of the speed round.
No, that's fine.
But I'm glad when you think of a colonoscopy, you think of me. That's special.
I think that's the main quote of this story. But what is your greatest extravagance?
My boat. I have a little, it's just a little speedboat to pull the kids in tubes, but I am at my happiest when I'm on the water on my boat or a jet ski down to the Jersey Shore. Nothing is better.
What about playing a video game while on that boat?
That would be dangerous. And unfortunately for my family, I'm nuts about safety. I am very rules oriented. I'm usually pretty chill, but when we get to a boat, and if you want to see Missy and my relationship tested, watch us during docking. It is not a comfortable experience for anyone. There's not a lot of trust there between more from my wife's direction heading towards me. Let's just say.
Scott, this has been such an awesome conversation. Had such a great time meeting you the other night and really great to hear all the details of the risks you took and how it paid off. It's such an inspiring story.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for having me. It was great.
And where could people want to hear more from you, see what you guys are up to? What's the best way for them to check out what Bull and Branch is up to?
Yeah, I mean, following me on LinkedIn is a good place to start, and Twitter. I tend to put my thoughts out into the ether. Maybe someone listens. If you're on Twitter, it's going to be mostly my frustration with the sports teams I root for, but LinkedIn is definitely a good place to go.
Don't tell me you're a Jets fan.
No, I'm a Giants fan. Is it any better?
Oh. We'll hug next time to commiserate.
Exactly.
Neither one's doing great at this moment. All right, Scott, thanks so much. Great talking to you, my friend.
Thanks so much.
All right, that wraps up another episode of How Success Happens. Thanks so much for listening. If you can stand even more of me in your life, please subscribe to my Substack. This should be fun. I write about embarrassing things in my life that will make you feel much, much better about your life decisions. And hey, if you're feeling the show, drop us a review, would you? Those old ones are for the other guy, and it'd be cool to get some love for the shiny new host. That's me. And if you are digging this sweet, sweet theme song, please check out more music from Nika RPM over on Bandcamp. And hey, do you have a comment, a success tip, or a question for one of our guests? send it in to our bright and shiny new email address, howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com. You send it in, I will read it on the air. And that's the Dan Bova promise. Catch you next time.